welcome back to another episode of this Sunstone podcast. I'm your host, John Larson. First of all, I'd like to thank all those who have reached out over the last few weeks and months and to wish me well and to express concern about my well-being. I've taken a little bit of sabbatical for the last 3 months or so, but here I am. I'm back and doing well. In general, I've been good. Oftentimes, real life, having a job, having a family, raising some teenagers and paying bills and all that sort of stuff takes precedence and keeps us from doing fun things like the Sunstone podcast. But it isn't all just a time constraint. There is a need sometimes for myself to take a step back from Mormonism. Mormonism can be difficult to navigate for, well, really all of us from time to time. It's a way of life. It's a philosophy. It's a set of living ideals and beliefs about the universe and beliefs about family. It involves political positions and all sorts of intrigue and it plays out in our culture, in our society, in many different ways. For those of us who have our families in the church and grew up in the church, were educated in the church, no matter how long it's been that we've been out of the church, it's really difficult for most people to just completely walk away. And sometimes there are things that have happened to us in the church, or things that happen to us as a result of a faith transition, or things that have happened to loved ones that leave a mark and emotional baggage that never quite goes away. The truth about growing up and becoming an adult is that you don't really heal completely ever from some of the bigger things that happen to you in life. And we don't get to choose what our big things in life are. Some of us get cancer. Some of us have loved ones who are very close to us who die too young. Some of us suffer with depression. Some of us struggle with health concerns. It can be a million different things. And Mormonism is one of those things that gives a lot of people much joy, but also is in a place in this world that can cause a lot of pain. And I think I want to address some of that on this episode and really talk kind of about my position on Mormonism. I think it kind of informs why I sometimes need to step back and take breaks and not engage. And I'd like to kind of help explain my positions on these different aspects of Mormonism. I think there's times when I have confused people, where on the one hand I might be very, very critical of the church, and on another hand, I might be pushing for sort of an ecumenical focus of trying to get along and trying to find middle ground. And I believe both of those positions, and I don't think I have to kowtow or subvert one to the other. And I've kind of written down like 10 principles or my 10 beliefs or positions about Mormonism, and I'd like to go through those for the next few minutes. First of all, I think we need to be clear about there's four separate aspects of Mormonism. First of all, you have the Mormon people, and really that includes people like you and me. That includes all of our neighbors and our friends and those who go to church, or those who are Jack Mormons, or those who are ex-Mormons. There are all those people who have encountered Mormonism in their life, and it has shaped the way they view things, the way they identify themselves, the way they identify their family and their friends. And people are what, in my view, everything is all about. Then we have culture. Of course, culture is kind of an extension of people, but in that we live in culture. Sometimes we like things about the current culture. Sometimes we don't like them. And we have microcultures. You know, if you go down to Short Creek, there is a particular Mormon culture there. If you go out to Kirtland and spend some time with the Community of Christ, they have a different culture. There's aspects that sometimes bring us all together, that unite us as a people. And I've been to, you know, Sunstone conventions or other things where there's people from all sorts of the different cultural spectrums, and there's things that do unite us culturally, but there are these individual cultures. So you have Mormon culture. Our third one is, of course, Mormon history and doctrine. That exists, and it's historical facts of what happened, of who was where, what the church was doing at this time, what other people believed about it, what the church taught about its own beliefs. And that changes over time. And the fourth one, which is the 800-pound gorilla, which is the quote-unquote Mormon church. And by this, I'm referring to the corporate church, the billion, and the organization that's worth tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars in Salt Lake City, that owns property and cattle farms and private airplanes and hunting preserves and rents out most of the office space in Salt Lake City and defines the curriculum of the church and excommunicates people and does all that stuff. That's the corporate church, the Mormon church. And I think there is sometimes lobbed at critics like myself the criticism that when we are criticizing the church or we're talking in a critical fashion or an analytical fashion about history or culture or doctrine, that we are somehow attacking the Mormon people. That couldn't be further from the truth. And I think that there are those who use it as a rhetorical trick to say, you know what, if you're attacking the teachings of Brigham Young or student policy at BYU-Idaho, or you're criticizing the way the Mormon church is lobbying the legislature, then you're attacking the Mormon people. Nothing could be further from the truth. And that nuance is especially lost oftentimes on a lot of Mormons in the pews, because they're constantly told that they're all the same things. That if you criticize Mormon doctrine, you're criticizing Mormon people. That you're being bigoted or you're being prejudiced, and those aren't real. Sometimes those differences get muddy because you can't have a culture without people. You can't have an ongoing church without doctrine, and history is what happened, and it's nothing that we can escape. But I think there's value in analyzing each of those, and I think you can love Mormon people and hate the Mormon church. I think there's parts of the history that you can find adorable and really want to engage, and there's other parts of the history that you can find disgusting. I think there's parts of the culture that you can be critical of, while there's other parts of the culture that you can praise. Sometimes I think that there has been this belief that it's all or nothing. You either love Mormons or you hate them. You're either all in or you're all out. And nothing can be further from the truth. It's just simply not true. Okay, so given that little background, let's go through my 10 statements here on what I kind of believe about the church. And I think hopefully this will resonate with some of you. I know there's a lot of people out there trying to figure out what they believe and what they feel and how to contextualize the church and its doings and their own faith experience. So I'm sharing this as a matter of trying to connect with you, dear listener, and also to help explain my points of view, why I can be very critical on one podcast and be very supportive on the next. First of all, and I although these are not necessarily in order, I think this one sits at number one. All human beings deserve compassion and tolerance. This world, this life we live in is complicated. It's hard. The world is a very complex place, and it's more complex than any of us can understand. And people are trying to do their best, oftentimes with limited information. There are people who are also trying to fleece you. There's people who are trying to hurt you. There's people who want to take what you have. There's people who hate you just because of who you are, for the color of your skin, or who you love, or what culture or what language you speak. And we have to try to achieve compassion and tolerance for people. But tolerance itself is a sticky mess, because even the act of tolerance requires not tolerating intolerance. It becomes paradoxical. It becomes a very difficult thing to pin down. Nobody's written the Ten Commandments of Tolerance, because so far we haven't discovered a way to do that. We haven't been able to isolate them. We know it's one of those things we play by ear. We know it when we see it. And I try to give in my personal life the broadest individual discretion for people to choose their own path, to choose to believe things that I think are false, and to some degree to choose to believe things that I think are harmful or dangerous to them and their family and to our society. And that's where the tolerance of tolerance has to start breaking down. There becomes a point when certain beliefs are harmful or deadly or can cause a lot of people harm. There's sort of a utilitarian principle. We want to tolerate so that we have a pluralistic society and that as many people can believe as many things. And I usually, in shorthand, when I'm talking to friends, I usually say the same thing, which is do whatever you want, believe whatever you want, just try not to hurt anybody. And that kind of goes to my belief. Now, that's kind of paradoxical again for me in my history of criticizing the church, because I know that my words have caused pain to many people. And I know that my words are oftentimes seen as intolerant of the beliefs or thoughts or religion of others. But that doesn't mean I'm not compassionate to those people. That doesn't mean that I don't see them as human beings who are struggling and trying to make sense of this world just like I am. So my first principle, and the most important one, is that the Mormon people matter more than doctrine, culture, and the church. That the people who leave the church matter more than their philosophical beliefs. That your neighbor who might believe things about you that are harmful and hurtful, they're still a person who deserves respect and compassion and to be treated as well as possible. That's my number one principle. My second principle is that all of us believe many false things. In fact, I kind of believe that most of us, the majority of what we believe is wrong. Now, that's a hard pill to swallow. We can look at other people and say, well, yeah, of course, most of what they believe is wrong. But when we take a historical view, if you pick somebody, pluck them out of any time in any country and any place, and you laid out their beliefs about the world, about science, about culture, about religion, about gender, you would take your modern view and say, yes, most of that is not correct. There's many things in there that are very, very wrong. But we have a really hard time applying that to ourselves because we don't necessarily have the rubric of what things that we are doing now that are horrific to future generations. Undoubtedly, there's some of them that we know we can guess at. For example, I think future generations will not look kindly on how readily we burned through fuel and animals and resources without consideration for the future. How many things that we just did an expansive, unsustainable nature. But it's hard to extract from that. So that might be one of the things that I believe falsely. The people in the future might look and say, you know, it's really an immoral act to eat beef in any real quantity because of the resources that it takes, for example. And I think that since most of us believe false things, we have two imperatives. One, you have to realize that people around you all believe screwy things. But also you have to turn that inward and examine your own beliefs. I think one of the greatest gifts that I received by leaving the church is the recognition that I had some beliefs that I shaped my life around. I made key decisions, where I would go to school, what career I would pursue, who I would marry, how I'd raise my children around what I now consider to be false premises. And having done that, it makes me less gullible, I believe. It makes me less likely to be taken in because I was taken in once already. And if we recognize that we all have false beliefs, I think that can make us a little bit more tolerant to listening to what other people say because our truth detection antenna for all of us is bent a lot more than we wish it were. It's more difficult for all of us to examine and understand truth with a capital T than we wish it were. Okay, my number three principle. The church is not true by its own definition of truth. And that's a statement that I want to come back to in the future. In fact, I'm working on some writings about this. There's been a lot of people who've criticized the church for you know this belief and this historical event. But when I've done a deep dive, and I have read a lot and tried to understand Mormon doctrine, I don't think the church holds up to its own pattern. And that goes for a lot of the things the church has said and done over time and insisted is true is demonstrably And if one attacks it with an unbiased or open mind, or not attacks, but one approaches it, one would see that it is simply not true, nor can it be true. It's full of too many inconsistencies, too many incongruities, too many things that if proposition A is true, proposition B must be false, but you have to believe A and B simultaneously, and yada, yada, yada. So I want to be absolutely clear. I don't, it goes beyond belief for me. The church has been proven to be false by its own definition of what a true church is, time and time and time again. The evidence is overwhelming. It's on par with, say, the theory of evolution. No experiment has ever demonstrated the theory of evolution to be false, and there's been hundreds of millions of experiments and data collected that show that it is a working theory. Now, scientific theories modify over time. And likewise, there are things that the church teaches that inevitably are true. If the church teaches it's better to spend more time with your family, well, that's a good thing. But the church doesn't get a pass on its truth claims because it happens to pick up with some common sense or even less common truths that it lands upon. You can tell if a student is taking a multiple choice test, you can tell the student cheated if they get a zero, because it would be just as difficult to get a zero on a multiple choice test as it would be to guess through and get 100%. Meaning anybody going down a bubble scan chart and filling out random answers is going to give a certain statistical percentage of those answers correctly. Likewise, the church, being a real entity and real world dealing with real people, inevitably lands on some principles that are useful. And that are helpful, but that doesn't speak to the truth value of the entire proposition. Now, I have a whole body of work that's out there, a podcast named Mormon Expression, where I went through in painstaking detail. And you know what? I didn't even exhaust the list. I kept a list. I still have it. It's here on my computer of all the potential podcasts that I could record. I think when I stopped, that list is 200 or 300 long of things that I didn't do. There is, and the field is white when it comes to proving the church has false claims or false beliefs. But I think it's important that no matter what else I say, that you, dear listener, understand that I believe that the church is not true at all by its own definition of truth. Okay, number four. Now we're getting a little bit more controversial. I believe that believing in the church is actually harmful. It is harmful to you as an individual. Truth matters. And when we build our own identity, our own epistemology, our own view of the universe on things that are patently false, that are not true, it harms the way we interact with truth. It harms the way we interact with others who choose not to buy into your falsehood. Additionally, the church teaches many harmful things. And by following the tenets and principles of the church, you will perpetuate psychological myths that cause harm to people. You will act in ways that are unkind, but that are justified because the person is an apostate or a sinner. You will do things to yourself. You will limit yourself. You will give away a money to a corporation that has billions that could have been used to further, I don't know, the education of your children, or provide yourself pay off medical bills, or provide a modicum of comfort. Believing in the church in and of itself is a harmful act.
You look pretty righteous, so I'm not sure you're going to understand this simile, but most podcasts are like beer. You have to drink a lot to get that buzz. The Sunstone Magazine podcast, on the other hand, is like whiskey. Small glass, big buzz. That's because our podcast isn't about interviews, conversation, or witty banter. Rather, it presents audible quality recordings of Sunstone's best articles, essays, fiction, and poetry. Do you want to hear what the best LDS minds have to say when they say it perfectly? Then this podcast is for you. Listen to some of our free episodes at patreon.com/sunstone, and then join us for a weekly shot of the best of Mormon thought and experience. And yes, You'll be able to drive home safely afterward and get a temple recommend if you want.
Number 5. The church itself is a harmful, destructive force in the world. The church has fought against things that they've been proven wrong on over and over. The church has landed on the wrong side of wars. The church has landed on the wrong side of issues like slavery. And to take that one, the church was under Brigham Young, had Utah be a slave state. Slaves were traded. Slaves were given to the tithing warehouse. So the church itself was involved in the slave trade. The church condoned and encouraged enslaving of Paiute Indians. And there's some historians estimate thousands and thousands of Paiutes were enslaved and had forced labor by the church. That's just one example. The church perpetuates and gets involved in political things that cause a lot of pain and suffering. The church has been involved in a lot of questionable lawsuits. These are just examples. But the church itself doesn't get a pass, in my view, because on the whole, it is a destructive force in the world. And that's a whole nother topic for another day. Number 6, church history and the history of my people, the people of Utah, the people of the Intermountain West, the people who claim the identity of Mormonism, they are interesting. Church history is interesting in and of itself. And church history should be engaged and looked at. That one need not have an orthodox or a kind view towards the corporate church in Salt Lake City in order to take a truthful an informative position on church history. Nor do I buy into the paradox, or not the paradox, not the right word. It's a flat out lie, it's a flat out falsehood that if you leave the church and you're a good person, that you'll leave it alone. I think there's people who might be interested in why their grandmother had the recipes she had, how the people in the 19th century wore the garment, what worship service looked like in Utah prior to, let's say, statehood. All these things are compelling, fascinating questions. What motivated people to cross the plains? How many people left the church? How did people view Salt Lake City when they were sent out to colonies in the mid-19th century? All of these are fascinating questions. And you can arrive at answers that the modern Mormons or the corporate church don't like, and that's okay. Number 7. Again, we're talking about things that I believe about the church. Leaving the church is difficult, it's isolating, and it causes damage to both the individual who leaves the church and their family members who choose to stay. I want to acknowledge the second one first, which is there are people who are happy in the church going along, and a family member chooses to leave the church and chooses to bring antagonism and hostility into their lives, into something that they find to be healing and edifying, something that they get a lot of pleasure and solace out of. And it can be very jarring to have somebody you love and respect, somebody who's close to you, a parent or a sibling or a child, leave the church. It causes psychological damage to people who never chose that route. Likewise, leaving the church itself, because of the way the church doctrine has wormed its way into just our common cultural entities, like christening a baby, baptism, weddings, funerals, those big events that mark the passage of time and our relationships to other people are all colored by the church. And the church has made no pretense about this. More than once across the pulpit, they have chosen and had as their position that a person's funeral who dies in the church is not about them. It's a chance to kind of push their worldview and their doctrine on those who attend those services to try to push them or cajole them into joining the church. All of these things play out into what is oftentimes a toxic soup of isolation. The number of people who've gone through divorces for no other reason than one person changes faith. The families that have been split up, the people who've been fired from jobs. Leaving the church is very painful. And like I said at the top of the podcast, even though it's been 14, 15 years for me, and my life is not shaped by the church in the way that most people maybe listening their lives are. it still has ways of jumping up and biting you, especially in those type of life events like weddings and funerals. Number eight, teaching others that the church is true is harmful and is an immoral act, in my view. Oftentimes, the missionary service and those things are deceptive. They take advantage of people who are in vulnerable positions. They obfuscate the truth. They practice cultural imperialism and have people destroy their own traditions and their own heritage. And I think that it is something that is fair game to be fought against. If the church were taking a more passive role, a live and let live role, then I think they would get a freer pass on this. But the fact is they have multiple MTCs. They devote billions of dollars to the missionary program. They send out 50,000 missionaries all across the world with one goal, to get people to abandon the faith of their birth and switch to Mormonism, which happens at huge social cost. So I believe that this is, in fact, an immoral act. Number nine, it is a moral imperative for those who know the truth to work to limit the power and influence of the church. Now, I don't believe it is an imperative or even necessary to convince individual Mormons. As a matter of fact, I would advise against it, to take on an individual and try to convince them that what they believe, what they hold to be true, and what they cherish is wrong. I think that that generally doesn't lead to a good place for either you or the person who's listening. But I do believe that the influence of the corporate church, especially the church that's lawyered up and ready to go to war, we have a responsibility to stand up against them, to speak truth to power. And since we know that the church oftentimes traffics in falsehood and half-truths that are used for their own financial and organizational gain, it is important for us to do whatever we can to stand against it. Am I advocating violence? Absolutely not. Am I advocating anything that's criminal? Absolutely not. But I do believe that peaceful protests, writing letters to the editor, recording podcasts, writing books, giving lectures where people voluntarily can come and can digest that work is an important thing for us to do and an important part of our own repentance process. I went on a mission in 1992 to among Laotian refugees. I took advantage. I didn't choose this. This was thrust upon me, but I was an adult. I was 19 years old. I took advantage of people whose lives had been torn up and devastated by a war that had been perpetuated by powers outside of Laos or Vietnam. I stood by idly as my leaders told us to not allow the Laotian people to participate in help ceremonies that were thousands of years old, cultural adhesion that defined who they were as a people, and we stood in the way of that. That is a sin that is on my shoulders. And because of that, I have a responsibility to help level the field, as it were. Number 10, the only way out of the endless cycle of constant religious wars and constant religious fighting and infighting and violence and hate crime and murder and concentration camps and all of those things that we see repeated over and over again is through pluralism, not tribalism. Now, I want to take this back to my first point, which is all human beings deserve compassion and tolerance. And even though I don't like the corporate church, and even though there are many aspects of Mormonism that I find are damaging and harmful, I think we all need to try to find a way to live together. I think the problem in politics in the United States today is both the Democrats and the Republicans are playing the same game. They have given up the idea of compromise. They've given up the idea of working together across the aisle. And they're all playing for a weird game of winner take all. If you look at their approach, their tactics, their goal is to take over the entire government and just have a Democratic utopia or a Republican utopia. That will never happen. We will all never agree on that thing. even though you might side with one and say, you know what, if everyone just became a Fox News watching Republican or you know, a Huffington Post Democrat, then we would all just be living in a utopia. It is a lie and it is false. And there are religions out there that do things and teach things that I find absolutely repugnant. But we as a people have to find a way to get along. But that does not mean we must be silent. It means we must draw the lines and say, if I criticize Christianity or Islam or Hinduism or Buddhism, that does not mean that I hate Buddhists or Hindus or Muslims or Christians. That we can do both things. We can work towards arriving at a better truth and yet still acknowledge the humanity and have compassion for people who don't believe what we believe. The trick, I think, which is hard to do, and I'm not perfect at it, is not seeing anybody who believes different from you religiously as your enemy. I am not the enemy of the Mormon people. I am part of the Mormon people. This is my state. This is my culture. And there's parts of it that I love, and there's parts of it that I deplore. Mormonism itself has to stand on its own grounds. And when the church has lied, when the church has committed murder, when the church has done terrible things, the church needs to be held accountable. But that does not make me the enemy of any particular Mormon.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Hanson Park, Executive Director of the Sunstone Education Foundation. I want to invite you to our weekly Sunstone Firesides. Do you remember those? Firesides that they used to have dating all the way back to the 1930s, when the LDS Church would hold monthly meetings to discuss really important gospel topics. Those meetings became known endearingly as Firesides. In January of 2019, Sunstone launched a new podcast that incorporates a nod to these firesides. Featuring a weekly evening podcast, it will display a range of hosts, all women, as they chat with diverse guests from across the Mormon spectrum. The hosts are all female-identifying that represent a broad perspective in Mormonism. These podcasts will be released every Thursday evening, so you can have that fireside feel brought right into your living room. So grab a cup of cocoa or coffee, since at Sunstone there is more than one way to Mormon. Snuggle up under a blanket and listen to incredible interviews by and from incredible people. You can support women and their work in Mormon studies, which is desperately needed, by donating at sunstone.org or becoming a monthly subscriber. Go to sunstone.org and click on the podcast tab for more info. We hope you enjoy it as much as we do.
I hope this is helpful. I know it seems like they don't go together. Like you can't work towards creating an ecumenical focus with people who, when you really philosophically or historically, don't hold truck with what they believe. When you would like to see key aspects of Mormonism go away. I do not like one bit the idea of merging American culture, capitalistic, lawyered up corporations with the freedom of religion. I think it's a bad idea, but it is what it is, and it's the world that I have to live in. I have to live in a state where the politics, in my view, is unduly influenced by the church. But I still have to live here, and I still have to be a good member of society the best I can. I have to be a good neighbor the best I can. Well, doing all this is hard. And I recorded the first podcast from 2009-2014, and I was done. I needed a break. I came back about a year ago now, and I did about 6 months of good content, and I had to take a step back. I had to take a sabbatical. I can't engage this constantly. I'm hoping that I can find a better balance. There's as my children get older, as some of you know, I've had some struggles with my kids in the mental health reign and in other aspects. And a lot of the things are getting a lot better. I think the message that I have for people who are in the middle of dealing with their kids and their family, it does get better. It never goes away completely, but things get better. And I feel like I'm in a much better place. But engaging Mormonism, engaging this religious battle royale that we're all in all the time is exhausting to me some of the time. And I don't like the pain that I have caused myself. I don't like that people have suffered because of my words. That was never my intention. Nor do I take any pleasure in the pain or suffering of other people. But I think it's important that we fight for truth and we fight for what's right and we fight for those who don't have a voice. And I think that's true in our own Mormon world and it's true in the world at large. Like I said in the beginning, we are living in a time of change and disruption. And it's important for us not to just step back. It's important for us to say we have a role in helping to shape the world even when we feel small. Even when we feel hopeless, even when we feel powerless, those are the times that it matters most. When we look at history, you know, World War I or World War II or Vietnam, some of those big things, the in the history books, the outcome is predetermined. You already know what's going to happen. But we get the chance, just like everybody else who's ever existed, to live on the cusp of history, where we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen with the church. We don't know what's going to happen with American culture. We don't know what's going to happen in the world. There's some things we can see coming. We can see that we're on unsustainable paths and paths that cannot continue unless we alter our actions and our drives and our desires seriously. And I think that's what we all need to do. So for everyone listening to this, I invite you to follow two what I see are non-contradictory imperatives. Try to understand and be compassionate and love your fellow human beings, even if they hurt you, even if they do harm to you, even if you don't believe what they do. And fight for the truth. Fight for things that are right. We need that more than ever now. Evil flourishes when good people do nothing. And it's so tempting to do nothing. It's so tempting to sit back and not engage. But here I am. I'm back. And I will be gone in the future, and I might be back. Who knows? But I want to do my best, and my best is flawed, and it is tired, and it is sometimes wrong. But I think together, you and I can create a dialectic that can lead us to the right place. Well, I really appreciate, again, all those who have reached out to me, those who listen to me, even those who listen to me because they hate what I'm saying. Hopefully, I can help spark and spawn new ways of looking at the world and new ways of discussing things. I'm really proud to be part of the Sunstone family and be part of this podcast, and I'm pleased to see the new voices and new challenges are coming on. I had said to Lindsay and Stephen and those guys at the very beginning, I never wanted this to be just another vehicle for my voice. My voice might be interesting to some people, but is not the end-all be-all. What Sunstone represents and what Mormonism represents and what being an American represents, what being in this world represents, is that we all have a diversity of views and we all have different ways of looking at things. And I'm proud that I've been able to contribute to that. And I would hope that I can give you all an opportunity to do the same. And I want to talk about that in my next episode, which should be coming on shortly. Again, thanks. Please consider making a contribution, even a small one, to organizations like Sunstone or others who, that are the small Davids fighting the big Goliath. There's a lot of money in our culture today. And Sunstone and there's many other organizations need your pennies. They need your support. And if you enjoy this podcast that I've done in the past, other podcasts, please consider giving even a little bit. Thanks for all your support, and I'll catch you next time.